Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Ryan McGuffey and Bruce Levine back here on Inside the Clubhouse, and let's get right to it. Back to the Score hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Back to the winter meetings, Bruce.
And one of the very top reporters and analysts in the game of baseball, nice enough to take some time on a Saturday morning to join us from Fox TV and The Athletic, our friend Ken Rosenthal joins us this morning. Kenny, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Bruce. Doing well.
Hey, great. Thanks for taking some time out. Let's get to it. I know you're probably busy packing right now, as I'll be seeing you there tomorrow in Dallas for the winter meetings. Does the Soto signing happen soon, and will that break a logjam where a lot of different things start happening?
I expect it will happen at the meetings, and yes, I think once it happens, then you'll see the big starting pitchers go, Corbin Burns and Max Fried. You'll see the position player market start to move. Willie Adames, Alex Bregman, dominoes will fall.
Ken, how will the Corbin Burns, Fried, and starting pitcher sweepstakes impact the trade candidacy of Garrett Crochet, or will it at all? Is that its own situation?
That's a good question, Ryan. It is its own situation, but at the same time, it seems to me that the demand will only rise once not only Burns and Fried are off the board, but Flaherty and Pivetta, Manaea, all of these guys. And the White Sox, at that point, if they don't have the deal they want yet, and obviously they don't, they will be left with the one top starter available. So they're conducting talks as we speak, of course, but at the same time, there is that dynamic of waiting and seeing where the losers for Burns and Fried and those other pitchers end up. And at that point, maybe those teams are more willing to make the trade the White Sox want.
Kenny, help us make some sense out of this for Cub fans with Bellinger. You reported 10 or 12 days ago that Bellinger was being looked at other teams. I named three teams being Houston, Seattle, and the Yankees as having had conversations with the Cubs about Bellinger. Explain why Bellinger... Why the Cubs would want to move Bellinger, and what the market might look like after Soto is off the books.
It seems to me they want to move Bellinger simply to change up the mix and free up some money. Now, they have solutions in center field, young solutions, and first base, right, with Bush and Crow Armstrong. So they're covered at those positions. Now, the problem with trading Bellinger is that he is guaranteed $32.5 million, at least in that deal, and that's problematic. It's really $32.5 million if he opts out after the 1 year, takes the buyout. So that's a lot of money. And I can't imagine the Cubs are going to be able to dump that on somebody entirely. But after the Soto thing is done, then teams, yes, may be more inclined. In fact, there were some people who thought, wow, why didn't Bellinger opt out? He might have been the best outfielder available, or one of them, along with Teoscar and Anthony Santander, after Soto. So there will be some interest, some demand for him, but the money is going to be a problem.
Do you expect, talking about Cody Bellinger, so if let's assume the Cubs do move on from Cody Bellinger and make a trade, do you expect the Cubs to be active in free agency to, I don't know if replace is the right word, but maybe fill a void in the lineup? Or are they more active in trade discussions, not just about Cody Bellinger, but for bullpen, starting pitching, et cetera?
Well, Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney from The Athletic just posted a story saying that they are looking at trades for starting pitchers, and that they also, if they sign a free agent starter, probably will be later, that they're not going to be involved in one of the bigger guys, but maybe someone who is kind of out there and presents a good opportunity later in the market. So they can go either way there. Obviously, they have to upgrade the bullpen as well, and that's an area where we know that they're going to be looking for. And the Bellinger thing and what they do with the offense, that's interesting too, because you guys probably would agree their offense was okay, but it could be better.
Definitely lacking a star in the middle of the lineup, a star meaning an impact hitter, without any question. Kenny, I was talking to a couple scouts yesterday about Crochet and where he might end up. There's some thought and some reporting going on that the Cubs actually have the best matchup for Crochet as to what the White Sox are looking for, which is high-quality young position players that are under contract control for a long period of time that they can plug in. Because we know when Crochet goes, position players are going to be part of the deal. The White Sox haven't been shy about talking about that. Do you feel a Cubs-White Sox trade can be made?
I'm sure it can, but I don't know that they're the best positioned. The Orioles have good young position players. The Red Sox have good young position players. And there are other teams as well. So we've seen the Cubs and White Sox make trades in the past. It's not impossible. The Quintana one certainly comes to mind. Even the Madrigal one from more recently. So it's possible, and I can see a match there. The Cubs do have some young position players. I'm not sure the Cubs want to trade those guys, but for Garrett Crochet, I would be really tempted to trade Owen Casey and whoever else might take Kevin Alcantara.
Looking at the White Sox specifically, coming off, you know, obviously a historic season of being 41 and 121, a lot of optimism with Will Venable getting his first job here. But how are the White Sox perceived and looked at in baseball as a destination? I know they're not going to spend a lot of money. In fact, they're going to be cutting more payroll. But when you have free agent players coming to the White Sox off of a season like this, are the White Sox in a position where they may have to overspend or give a little bit extra, maybe opt-out clauses, et cetera, in order to get players to come to Chicago?
I'm not even sure how serious they are about upgrading through free agency. I don't know that they're at a point where really they should be looking at big free agents. They want to clear some more money. They want to obviously trade Crochet for the best package they can get. Maybe trade Robert, and that remains to be seen if that will be possible. But I mean, what was it that Austin Slater said? He was their top target. I just don't see them being aggressive on bigger guys. Maybe some complimentary veterans just to have, obviously, to fill holes and serve kind of mentorship roles in the clubhouse. But I can't see them playing in the market big.
Rolling back to reporting on Soto, I'm told by anyone that seems to know anything that's going on that it's going to be $50 million a year as the AAV. Have you heard anything different than that? And is it going to be 12 or 14 years? Will it get to $700 million, do you think?
I do think it's very possible it gets to $700. And the reason I say that is because it's in the 600s. We know that. And it's even possible right now it's in the 700s. So I would expect that in the end, it's either a high average annual value in the 600, upper 600 range, or, well, it's going to be a high average annual value anyway, but a higher average annual value in the 600, upper 600 range than it would be in the 700. But I would not be surprised if it's 50 a year either, Bruce. I don't think anything would surprise me at this point.
All right, so Bruce is probably going to knock me off of my chair over here. But this is for Cub fans out there who are saying, why aren't the Cubs calling about Juan Soto? So I'm asking you, why aren't the Cubs a team that's playing in this deep pool of $700 million contracts and 13, 14, 15-year deals.
They should be.
Yeah.
They should be.
Thank you.
And they are a team that is a big market team, right? They play in a big market. There is no reason the Cubs should not be in this mix. And the only person who can answer that question is Tom Ricketts. And he's the owner, and he sets the budget and sets the agenda along those lines. They remind me very much of where the Red Sox have been the previous 3 or 4 years, kind of not participating in a big way in the free agent market, doing piecemeal things like Matthew Boyd. And I don't understand it. The Cubs are, as I said, a big market team. They should be operating that way, just as the Red Sox seemingly are operating that way now, but they are in the same boat.
Kenny, in closing in, Ryan and I appreciate your time very much. Look forward to seeing you roaming the halls in Dallas is what we do. We put on – how many steps do you think we do during winter meetings? You think we do 20,000 a day?
Well, it's funny, Bruce. For a while there, we didn't have the ability to measure it, but
that's
now
right.
We do. And 20,000 is certainly possible, yeah.
So John Heyman had a situation with WFAN yesterday, and we know John to be a very credible, connected reporter, a guy that you and I have worked around for years and years and years. And he was questioned about his credibility because he has a close relationship with Scott Boras. We did a segment here explaining that relationships and trust is everything in jobs that you do, that John does, that I've done for so many years. Is there anything wrong with that? I mean, is there any, aren't all businesses based on relationships and trust?
Yes. And certainly that is the basis of all reporting. And I'm not going to comment on John specifically, but Bruce, what you're saying there is absolutely true. Yes, relationships and trust are the core of what we do. And if you don't have it, you're not going to succeed very much. So that's all I'll say about that. You know, I'm not going to talk about John on WFAN. That's his business and whatever.
Very, very great answer. And thanks again for your time today. Look forward to seeing you. And I think as a reporter, are you looking forward to these meetings like I am? Because they've been pretty dull over the last 3 or 4 years. You think this is going to be more activity than we've seen?
Yes, because I think Soto is going to trigger a cavalcade of deals. And this should be a better meeting than, yes, we've seen the last couple of years, which have been dead ones. And they have not been fun.
Kenny, thanks so much.
Appreciate you, Ken.
Yeah, take care. Have a great day.
All right, so my takeaway from that is, Bruce, that the Cubs should be paying Juan Soto $650 million to be a Cub. I agree with Ken. You know that. I know that you fight back on it a little bit because of trying to position and be tied down to money, but when you're talking about a 26-year-old player that's, you know, generational, it could change everything. I know, it's tied up in RSN money. Bruce is looking at me like he wants to fight again.
I mean, there's not a team in baseball that wouldn't want Juan Soto.
Agreed.
Not one, okay? There's hardly any that wouldn't pay $40 million a year. Even the small market teams would be willing to do that for a Juan Soto. Realistically, you're going to get 14. He's going to get a 14-year deal.
Yeah, so it takes him to age 40,
there's,
right?
There's going to be he's going to be good for about 7 years.
Sounds pretty good to me.
He's 26 years old.
Right.
So the age has a tremendous amount to do.
No doubt about it.
With why he's going to get paid for 14 years.
1,000%.
It's still going to be Albert Pujols and Miguel Cabrera at the end of their careers for Soto. There's not going to be any question that the Yankees will be carrying this $50 million a year lag on their payroll in, you know, 7 or 8 years. However, if you win 2 World Series in that time and you're in the playoffs and you're in the ALCS every year, just about, it's New York, right? They have the money. I mean, just it was the same conversation about the Dodgers, the Yankees. As Kenny brings up, the Cubs can pay it if they want to. Again, how is the money structured? How does it impact you going down the line? More importantly, what people aren't looking at is – there's probably going to be a work stoppage in 2027.
Yep.
How are you structured for that coming out of that if there's a salary cap after 2027 and you have your money, half of your money tied up in two players, okay? How does that equate for you when you're looking down the line? Fans don't care about it right now. Media don't care about it. But owners do, and they look at this.
Well, I'm just looking at Miguel Cabrera's first half of that contract. It's MVP second, MVP five, back-to-back MVPs, MVP nine, MVP 11, MVP nine. I mean, and the Tigers. I know you're going to tell me how many World Series did they win. Well, they were a pretty damn good team for like those 7 or 8 years.
He was well worth the money.
100%. 100%.
Until the last Robbie 5 years.
He know Robbie's a big Miguel Cabrera guy. But I'm telling you right now, if I'm an owner, okay, obviously I'm not, but I can't worry about the last 5 years of the deal when you're thinking about those.
But you'd
first
be the
10.
First guy to be ripping them, saying, "What do
no
we
shot.
Do with this guy?"
No shot. I wasn't ripping.
You don't think Detroit fans and media are going? Can't you tell Miguel Cabrera to go home? He's just taking up a spot.
He was. But then those fans aren't realistic because they were probably the same ones that were saying, why aren't we signing this guy to a long-term deal? We're going to lose him. You can't have everything. You can't say, like, I want Juan Soto, but I really don't want to pay
what
him
happened,
because it's going to cost
Robbie,
me too much
Robbie,
10 years from now.
Get on the air. What happened to the Tigers once Javier Baez got hurt this year?
Much, much, much better.
Okay. So can you afford
But that was a bad contract from the start, though. We're not talking about Javier Baez as a $140 million player.
You're better off sending the guy home.
Okay. Then if the Cubs send 38-year-old Juan Soto home or the Yankees, not the Cubs because it's not the Cubs that are going to be signing him, the Blue Jays, the Mets, whoever. If they send him home at age 38 and they're looking up in the banners of left and center, left field and it says, you know, 2028 World Series champions, 2031 World Series champions. Who gives a rat's you know what?
Yeah, Ryan McGuffey will. He'll be on the air and doing his podcast.
Oh, that's crap. I'm
talking
here,
about
no.
Why do they stink? Why did they have to give him 14 years?
No, I'm asking why the Cubs are trading Cody Bellinger and not trying to beef up their lineup. Okay. Instead, they're, like Jameson Taillon has said, Drew Smyly said to us on these airwaves, people need to fear the Cubs lineup again. No one's fearing.
I agree.
Okay, well, trading Cody Bellinger and not adding, you hear Kevin just say, doesn't expect the Cubs to add a lot in free agency.
Texas Rangers, I've had people on this station that work here at other stations I listen to. They said the Texas Rangers made the greatest moves. They spent a ton of money in 2023. They won the World Series, right?
Yes, that's me. Hi.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. How'd they look this year?
They looked like they had some injuries.
Yeah.
They didn't.
They still had to pay those salaries, right?
Okay, well, I guess for all the Rangers fans that spent all that money and all the memorabilia and stuff and the memories
Seager
that they have with their kids winning World Series, it doesn't matter.
And
what's it for? What's the whole purpose of anything?
The purpose
is
to win.
Okay.
For
win
a fan.
What? Win what?
For media.
Win what?
Win the whole thing. Be the last team on the field.
And the Texas Rangers did that.
They did.
And
they
it cost them a lot of money, but they got it. And maybe maybe they'll be back in the playoffs again this year.
Right, maybe they will, or maybe people will say, gee, they spent all that money and all they got out of it was one World Series. Is that worth it?
Yes! All right. Oh my God, in this town? It's, oh my God, yes.
One World Series.
Yes.
The White Sox and Cubs had theirs. One was in 2005.
Yep.
The other was in 2016.
This town gets nothing. That's what Chicago sports fans get. They just take it to the teeth and to the chin. Every single year of most every single sport.
I do not disagree.
Okay. So you're telling me
what I'm saying is
if Juan Soto equals
spending
one
money
series,
is not always the answer to your problem.
It's not always the answer. But when the answer has not when they've done it the other way, when they've done it the other way and it hasn't given you wins or a World Series, what are we doing?
I would drive my 2016 Subaru down to the airport and pick up Soto myself.
I would walk in
here. He would love the luxury of my vehicle with all the stuff, the media stuff in the backseat of every media car. You know what I'm talking about.
I do,
and it would be a great beginning to his career. I'm on record saying they lack star power. The Cubs they were a boring team
but
this
you're
year.
But you're
they're good players.
They had good players. They don't have stars.
They
you
need,
know what?
They
that
need
equals
stars.
That equals 83 wins.
But those stars might be coming from the minor leagues.
Oh, come on.
Oh, like, you don't want to wait.
I don't. I will promise you. We can bet anything you want, any sandwich you want, any place. I will take you there in my non-Subaru media car and drive you there and have lunch. That five of these prospects won't hit. Okay. Of the seven,
which,
I'm going to get
which ones?
You can pick them.
You're the one saying it.
You have the field, my friend. You have the field.
You tell me which ones aren't going to be good.
I'm asking you. You pick four of them that are going to be stars.
Well,
how
then,
about that? You get the field.
Why,
you get all seven.
Why bother with the farce of having a minor league system?
The minor league system complements what you're doing at the major league level.
Baseball fans spend half of their time looking at their systems and other teams' systems.
Yeah, you know
to
what
see
else?
Who's going to be good?
And guess what everybody else is doing? Winning World Series. The Dodgers, yeah, the Mets.
They win every year. Every year.
Okay, well, I guess the whole point is to just build a great farm system, build from within, hopefully strike, you know, gold. They did in 16. Like, a lot of those guys hit, and then they fell off, and the Cubs didn't pay them. They got criticized for it, and the Cubs were right.
You know, you're one of the smarter guys I know in our business. But for you to sit there and say spending money is the way to winning, and
it's
that's
not
the only way.
Well, you're
that's
saying, not the only way.
You're saying minor league.
No, you're saying
the minor league players are without any worth.
You're being minor league dependent. I'm saying you need to finish the job. It's the one thing the White Sox didn't do. You want to know why the White Sox failed? There's a lot of reasons. But one big one is that they relied all on the prospects, and they didn't pay anyone when it was time to pay them.
Oh, they paid.
They paid the prospects. They didn't pay John Lester and Jason Hayward.
They were stars.
Or Ben Zobrist. They didn't do that.
They were stars for 5 minutes.
Oh, they weren't even stars.
Yes, they were.
The guys had not even played at the major league level. They were getting five-year deals. They had never played a game.
Eloy hit 30 home runs, right?
Yes.
In 2019.
And he finished with like 85 in his career with the White Sox. And now he can't even get a job.
2019. Their baseman was one of the top players in the game.
You're not listening to me. They should have signed Bryce Harper and Manny Machado and had those three guys. Then it would have been different.
They were being told that signing these young players ahead of time
was smart, and it was. Yeah. But they didn't fit. That's what I'm telling you, Bruce. It didn't work. They didn't finish the job. If the Cubs only relied on their farm system in 2016 and didn't go give John Lester 150-plus, right, and didn't go give Hayward 180-plus, and didn't go get Ben Zobrist for $56 million,
right,
it wouldn't have worked. I promise you, it would not have worked.
I understand, but they had the base of Bryant. They had the base of Rizzo. They had Schwarber. Okay, they
complimentary had parts at the time
they
became
Contreras,
stars.
Contreras, okay? They had a good core of
I
good
agree
minor league players.
And then they went out and spinish.
I'm cost a ton of money. I'm all for it.
So
guess what? This argument may or may not be interesting to people listening, but the point is we're both right. You have to have
you
both.
Are. Okay. All right, we agreed on that.
You have to have both.
You got to do both. You can't try to thread the needle of only farm system or only spending. I totally agree with you.
No, I mean, you have to spend money at the right time. This is probably the right time that the Cubs should be spending money if they feel they have a 30-year-old team across the board, all guys going toward their peak. They need to have a star player in there. Now, the creativity at these winter meetings by Hoyer might be able to land those type of players.
All right, I agree with that. I definitely agree. Like, Owen Cassidy and Juan Soto in the same outfield would have been pretty damn awesome to watch. But I do know one thing, as we turn the page here. Dick Allen belongs... Round five. Dick Allen deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, Bruce.
And we are going to discuss it with his son, Richard Allen, next as the Hall of Fame committee, the Classic Baseball Era ballot is about to be voted on tomorrow. Dick Allen, Ken Boyer, John Donaldson, Steve Garvey, Vic Harris, Tommy John, that's a great name, Dave Parker, Luis Tiant. One or a few of those may be elected, and we'll talk to Dick Allen's son, Richard, next on Inside the Clubhouse.
Join the Score at the Patrick Manley Award Dinner and Ceremony next Saturday, December 14th at Bernie's Book Bank in Lake Bluff from 6 to 8:30 p.m., honoring the top college football long snappers from the season. Lawrence Holmes will be there with Robbie Gold and Northwestern's David Braun for a Chicago sports panel discussion. Get your tickets now at berniesbookbank.org. It's all brought to you by Edward Jones and Zebra Technologies.
Well, with one out, here is Richie Allen. Allen has faced Lindy McDaniel many times in the National League. There's a long drive deep center, way back in my face. It could be. Hey! Almost into the net! Holy cow!
Oh, Harry Carey on a Dick Allen home run call is about as good as it gets on a Saturday morning. Ryan McGuffey, Bruce Levine here on Inside the Clubhouse. The 1972 most valuable player here for the Chicago White Sox. An 8.6 WAR season. Bruce, listen to these numbers real quick before we get to Richie on the line here. 308 average, 420 on base, 603 slug, a 1023 OPS, a 199 OPS plus. That's okay. That'll work.
That's not even the tip of the iceberg, as I was lucky enough to watch Dick Allen's whole career. And we are fortunate enough to have his son, Richard Allen, join us on Inside the Clubhouse today as the Classic Baseball Era ballot is to be voted on tomorrow. Dick Allen is one of eight that is being put out there as consideration for the class of 2025. And we're pleased to bring in Richard Allen now. Richard, good morning. And how nervous are you and the family waiting for the decision tomorrow?
Oh, good morning. Good morning, guys. Good morning, Bruce, Ryan. That Harry Carey voice, but that gives you goosebumps.
Yeah,
you're
absolutely.
Right.
Sure does.
everything's good. We're all pretty calm. As you know, we've been through this before. So nervous? No. Just sitting, waiting to see if he gets the call.
Yeah, I mean, missed by one vote in 2015, missed by one vote again in 2022. Bruce just read some of the names of the eight people on this committee. There certainly seems to be a lot of smoke and aura and good feelings, you know, from what you read, but that's happened in the past too. So have you thought about, you know, it's hard probably in your position because you guys have come up short twice. Have you thought about what that would be, though, to get that phone call and to hear that your dad is going to be a Hall of Famer?
I thought about it, but, you know, I don't like to overthink the process. But sure. It's just more of a sigh of relief. And obviously, it's for me to experience hearing it, because he's not here, it's for him to experience that, you know, and for me to go, I have no one to grab or no one to hug and say, you made it. Congratulations.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, it's for it to happen. It would be a great thing, a great honor. Well-deserved. I mean, he did it. He did all the work. He put it out there. He's always said, my resume is, he's like, look on the back of a baseball card. There's my resume.
Yeah, and for those who wonder what the resume, I just want to read this one stat because Hall of Famers have to be dominant for 5, 8, 10-year period. This is Dick Allen from 1964 to 1974. He had 299, 386, 554. It was good for a 165 OPS plus. In those 11 years, only Hank Aaron had a higher OPS, and it was by 1 point. The people trailing your father on that list: Willie McCovey, Frank Robinson, Willie Stargell, Roberto Clemente, Willie Mays, Harmon Killebrew, Carl Yastrzemski. Hall of Famers, Hall of Famers, Hall of Famers up and down. That's the type of player he was. I really do hate, and you're not the first time. Ron Santo comes to mind too, in Dallas, ironically, I believe in 2011, of a player that was shortchanged while he was alive and didn't get to have the moment while he was here. And I hate that for your family because I personally, and Bruce is a Hall of Fame voter, I believe at times, I hate that this process comes to this, that yes, your dad has the resume to get in, but it feels a little bittersweet that he won't be the guy there tomorrow if in fact that happens.
Very true. You summed it all up right there. I mean, you took it right out of my mouth. And that's absolutely right. He deserves his flowers, and he's not going to get that opportunity if it happens. And you know, that's no disrespect to the other candidates, but the numbers are there, and he and I would talk constantly. And you know, obviously, when he was living, he would say, he would always ask why. Really, he didn't really care. He just was like, well, you know, I was just doing what I was supposed to do. But I was like, no, man, you deserve to be there. So, you know, and you're right. I don't understand it, and I don't know the smoke mirrors or what, but he came up short.
The essence of Dick Allen as a player cannot be seen unless you watched it. I was fortunate enough to be growing up and watching your dad play from the time he was a rookie with the Phillies on, and people didn't know that Dick Allen, when he first came up, could have stolen 75 bases a year. They didn't know that he could hit 50 home runs a year. They didn't know that he was a great teammate. It took work. It takes being able to talk to the people that he played with and around to understand the aura of Dick Allen. So when you put a committee together, Richard, as knowledgeable as they are and as hard work that they put into it, the essence of your dad doesn't come through. The essence was a White Sox fan from 72 to 74, watching him hit nine irons out of the ballpark 450 feet, and the ball was still going up and rising and never getting over 15 feet off of the ground. That was the essence of using a 40 to 42-ounce bat, the essence of being one of the smartest base runners in the game, the essence of being a good defensive player at multiple positions. I was fortunate enough to watch that. I know growing up, you didn't get to see all of it, but you know, your father was one of the great players in the game, period. What type of a father, what type of a friendship did you have with your dad?
Oh man, you get me choked up. We would call each other every day at 9 a.m., you know, just to say hi, just to say good morning. And he always referred to me as my best you. You're my pal. You're my best friend. So the relationship, I mean, I'm junior. And, I mean, I stand on his shoulders. And our relationship was always, we were best friends. So, and it had nothing to do with sports, had anything to do. It had everything to do with life, actually. So he cared more about having a farm than he did sports or baseball or anything like that. But if you were to talk to him, he wanted to know everything about sports. So my son, Richard, the third, he always kept up with him in sports, and he always wants to know high school sports. Yeah.
Yeah, we hear it, Richard.
Totally feel it. I wanted to, you know, we lost Bill Melton, our dear friend, this week, and I was not fortunate to watch your father play like Bruce was. So I have to, you know, do my work and figure out what the legends were of Dick Allen, and I would lean on Bill Melton for those. He loved Dick Allen. I know Allen was one of his favorite teammates of all time, and he would tell me, he's like, you want to know how good he was? When you think you are good at something, he's like, I won a home run title in the year before. And he goes, this guy comes to the White Sox. He's bigger than life. He's larger than anything that walks. His talent, he could do something, you know, with a baseball just by flicking it up in the air. He's like, that made everybody stop. He didn't take batting practice. He'd just kind of come in. You're like, oh, you want me to take BP? He'd come in, take BP, as Bruce said, hitting nine irons, you know, hammering them 450. Time and time again, he would get about 10 swings. This is what Bill would tell me. He'd get about 10 swings and be like, yeah, I'm good, and just come back up when it was time for the game, do his thing, get his spot in the lineup, and go and you know, have a ridiculous game. So loved hearing those stories. The iconic June 12th, 1972 Sports Illustrated cover, I have that framed in my, like, cave, and I wasn't even alive for it because that's how much I appreciate, you know, what your dad did, and then the stories and the legends that have gone on because of him. What's one story that he told you on the field, off the field, from his career that you could share with us that stands out?
That my father
told
me?
Yeah.
I was gonna say, because I hear more, he never really talked about himself a lot, but I was going to say that Vince Coleman, I used to work on the Phillies ground crew back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And Vince Coleman, someone said, oh, yeah, no, that's Dick Allen's son right there. And he said, oh, wow. You know, he introduced himself, shook my hand. He said, I've heard stories about your father. And I said, really, what was that? And he's like, he said he used to get in the batting cage he'd move up halfway to the, you know, to the pitching machine. And he told, he would tell him, crank it up to the highest it can go. and he would let it hit him, and then he'd go, you know, and take BP that way.
Oh my God.
So yeah. And so there were things like that. I would hear more stories from other people that would say things like that. And it was.
In closing with you, Richard, and we wish you and your family the best of luck. As Ryan put it, you know, it would be bittersweet, but your family deserves it, okay? So yeah. we're hoping for you tomorrow.
Thank you.
I had the good fortune of talking to him 6 or 7 different times, and he was a difficult interview from the perspective of he didn't want to talk about himself. He always talked about team. He always talked about team accomplishments. If you really wanted to talk to him about horses, then you'd get him to start opening up, okay? He, as you said, he wanted to talk about the farm all the time. The humbleness of having a father like Dick Allen, how did that resonate with you? How did that help you make you the man that you are?
Oh, I'm 100% him. I mean, he... from what I understand, it's when he won the MVP, they had to mail that the MVP plaque to him. He
wasn't showing up for the New York writers.
No. They did. They had to mail it to him because he didn't feel like he deserved it all. And his brother, my uncle. He said to me, he's like, man, you're 100% of your father. So the humbleness is, it comes from the small town, growing up in a small town. And it just wasn't about the game. It was just who he is and who I am.
Yeah.
We appreciate you joining us, Richard.
The one thing we didn't even get into. And I talked to him about maybe some other time, the racism that he had to deal with and how he got through it and how it actually changed him as a person and his persona as an athlete. It's worth a long discussion, and I'm sure at some other time, Richard will be able to visit that. But all the best to you guys tomorrow, and be looking forward to seeing you in Dallas. Thank you for taking out today.
Oh, man, thank you. Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Guests, join us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports books. And before Chicago takes on San Francisco, tune in tomorrow morning from 9 to 11:45 for your local Ford dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score, presented by Aurelio's. Olin Kreutz, Patrick Manley, and Mully will get you set for the game. Then immediately following the game, they'll have an instant reaction on the Great Clips postgame show, presented by Sony Pictures, Wonderverse, Chicago, and Timber Tech Decking and Railing. Say that 10 times fast. All of it can be heard on The Score and the Odyssey app. We'll be back to talk about two things we expect to happen on both, one of each on both sides of town at the winter meetings. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app.
Ryan McGuffey, Bruce Levine, back to wrap things up here on Inside the Clubhouse. We've been talking about Bill Melton throughout the show. We lost our friend, the legendary, iconic Belton Bill Melton. And Mike has been patiently waiting to talk about Bill from Glencoe. Mike, how are you this morning?
Well, guys, thanks for taking the call, and I appreciate a lot of the 1970s White Sox talk this morning. I just think it's important to look at Melton's life and the concept of what's going on right now at the White Sox. If you were a Sox fan in the late 60s or early up to 1970, there was zero hope except for two guys who were coming up in the minor league system, Carlos May and Bill Melton. And Bruce was not kidding when he said we had no offense at the time. Melton was the guy we looked for if you were a Sox fan to make baseball enjoyable again. And lo and behold, he was actually as good as advertised, both on the field and with the fans. That was a huge deal, and his ascendancy to being such a fine player really helped, certainly along with Dick Allen, to revitalize the franchise. So So Melton really, I think for a lot of us, has a special place in our hearts because he was the real deal. He was ours. He came up through the system, and we don't have that right now. And so, you know, we celebrate Melton's life. I think he was, as you guys suggested, a more important part of Sox fans' lives at that time than we really realize. And thank you very much for talking about him.
Yeah, well, we appreciate it. It was really well said, beautifully said, Mike. And, you know, Bill, as the chairman, Jerry Reinsdorf, put out a statement this week, you know, he said Bill had two careers with the White Sox, the playing career you mentioned, and then 30 years of broadcasting that, you know, got the next generation of White Sox fans to understand who he was as a player and how much he was loved by doing pre- and post-game shows and how he was an ambassador for the team, too, because he was so good with the fans. He loved meeting new people. Love being a part of their lives, and the White Sox were part of his DNA.
Jerry gets bashed for being too loyal, staying with people too long. That's not the case with Bill Melton.
Absolutely not. All right, so as we get set here to the top of the hour and Rosenblum's next with Saturday Suckage, we got two baseball teams. Tomorrow you're going to Dallas, Bruce. Give me one thing. We've talked a lot about the Cubs and Bellinger. We've talked a lot about the White Sox and Garrett Crochet. Everything seems to be being held up by Juan Soto's record deal that's about to happen. Give me one thing that you expect both teams to accomplish at the winter meetings.
I expect the Chicago Cubs to trade Cody Bellinger. I can't tell you it's going to be exactly at the winter meetings, but I think once the Soto thing gets cleared up, I think he gets moved. And again, you know, if you're a Cub fan, wait to see what they get back. Wait to see how they adjust this. Don't just react saying it's a salary dump. Let's see what they get back. I think they'll get back something good. With the White Sox, I think the Crochet thing is going to heat up significantly. I also think that that there's a chance that both Robert and Benintendi get traded. Okay. Ooh. Benintendi... the second half of the year
really good
was a really good player, and for $15 million a year, he certainly doesn't fit on the White Sox, but he fits on a lot of teams. A left-handed bat with power, a better defender than he showed for a portion of the last year because of injury. So I expect some peripherals to get done, and I think Robert's name will come up more often than we think during these meetings.
Yeah, I mean, Robert's kind of a one-year flyer, really. He's $15 million with two $2 million buyouts. He could be a 1-for-19 with Benintendi.
Two $20 million buyouts,
but they have $2 million. It's a $2 million buyout if you want to move on from the option. Benintendi had 13 bombs and had an 830 OPS in the second half. I mean, he was a good player.
If I could tell you last year at the beginning of the year that you could get Luis Robert, who had hit 38 home runs, for some good young players, you would say, you're crazy. We're not going to trade him. And if you're the other team, you go, yeah, we're going to do it. So keep your eye on Robert. That might be interesting.
I'll give you this from me as I close. I there's no scenario I'm bringing Luis Robert back to the White Sox. That, unless the package is so ridiculously bad. But I can see him being packaged in a deal, maybe with Garrett Crochet, maybe with Benintendi. We will see. Bruce, safe travels, my friend. Enjoy those 20,000-step lobbies that you're going to be roaming through for the next 4 or 5 days.
People can follow me on X at MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, writing the Cubs and Sox, 670thescore.com, also on Marquee as we report from the winter meetings. I know you're going to be busy this week as well.
I'll be following you, my friend, at Ryan McGuffey. Robbie, appreciate you behind the glass, my man. Rosenblum is next. This is Inside the Clubhouse. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey at 670 The Score.